By way of introduction to our next guest, I can tell you that Lucas started first. Along with his dog, Tisher, in September, he set out in his canoe to paddle the entire Mississippi River from Lake Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico. Natalie started shortly after that on a through hike of the Superior Hiking Trail, and after she finished that, 300 miles, she joined with Lucas in November to finish the Mississippi paddle just before Christmas. 2,200 miles on the water, and about 103 days. I'm talking about Lucas Will and Natalie Jackson, both of whom were Cook County residents just before their recent adventures, and both of whom are now joining us by phone from their new temporary residence in Missoula, Montana. Lucas and Natalie, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Thank you. Good to hear you guys.
Tell us one view from each of you on this, how and why you decided to do this trip. We'll start with Lucas on that one.
Okay. Well, 3 years ago, I actually went around Lake Superior in a kayak with a good friend from college. And when we finished that trip, or maybe the last month of paddling that trip, I started thinking about my next paddling trip. And at the time, and still, I was really intrigued with Minnesota's connection to two huge freshwater bodies of water, one being Lake Superior and the other is the Mississippi. And I just thought that it would be really cool to experience both and to see both. And obviously, they're both totally different experiences. But I was really excited to get on and go the length of the river after going around the whole shoreline of Superior. And then kind of a second part to that is my dog, Tisher, had spent the whole summer when I was on Superior with my parents down in the cities. And while I'm sure she enjoyed all the extra tuna in her nuggets and treats, she gained some weight, and when I got back was a little jaded at leaving her behind, I think. And so I promised I'd take her on the next trip I went on. And she won't fit in a kayak very well, so it had to be a canoe trip. And I figured the Mississippi was one of those classic canoe routes. So that's kind of why I went for the river.
So then, in the meantime, you met Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
And Natalie, what was your role in all this?
First, with the SHT, I was just so intrigued with it finally being done, you know, being able to finish, you know, go through the section between Duluth and Two Harbors. So I thought it would be appropriate to be going through that and not having it be a super long trip and Lucas being on the river still. It just seemed enticing to not come with. so we figured that out in the logistics, and so I was able to go, you know, from our country's northern border all the way down to the southern border, and have it be, you know, our individual trips, but then coming together and being able to finish at the end, which was pretty awesome.
So between the two of you, yeah, you did cover from the border to the Gulf. And one took the river route, and one took the hike and partial part of the river route. Would you just give us a little synopsis of what you did, Lucas, first before Natalie joined you?
Well, so I left, like you said, on September 7th from the headwaters, and that time of year, very low water usually, and that's what I found. I knew I was up against a lot of challenges just with that season and the water level. And sure enough, I actually did. I didn't paddle much the first 2 days. I left Itasca. I paddled across the lake, and then I portaged the headwaters there, those hand-laid boulders. And I ended up just pulling or floating or dragging my beloved Kevlar Winona canoe for 11 miles. And I got to a point where the boat was really beat up. And it was only, you know, 2 days in, and frankly, my back was beat up, and so I scrambled up and hitched a ride to Bemidji, at Lake Bemidji, and I went from there. I put back in and went from there. So I've still got 40 miles, and that was a big thing for me in the beginning.
So you have to go back and do that, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and so I'm going to go back in the spring and at high water and do it. That should be a lot easier. I shouldn't be having to pull myself through thick rice beds this time around. But mentally for me, it was actually really, you know, a tough thing because you start out on something like that, and it's this daunting, big thing in front of you, and you're really excited for it. the idea of not being able to do it doesn't creep into your head, and then all of a sudden you have these, to me, big challenges. And so to make the decision to hitch a ride was a big one, but it was the right choice, and I was able to get back on the river the very next day from Bemidji and keep going. And a lot of those 25 days it took me to get from my Itasca to the Twin Cities, you know, some dams that I had, that portage, small, narrow, really personable river, and it was gorgeous. Some of the time during that stretch, I was wishing for a lot of current because there wasn't any. And then I finally got current, and I was wishing for the first 25 days back. I just loved the intimacy of being up there. The wildlife was unbelievable. It was just, yeah, so pretty and muddy and windy. Those bends were half mile long compared to the 20-mile bends, you know, further down in the southern part of the river. And I just really liked it. It felt like more of a go-kart course instead of getting on a super highway.
So then at the time you're doing this, and you started in September, right?
Yeah, September 7th.
You hit weather all the way down there, I would say. But
it did.
But you hit some, when you hit some weather, some wind and tough stuff up not too far from Bemidji, right?
Yeah. You know, and not for one second did I really think that I'd be able to put my feet up on the gunwales and just float this thing all the way down. But I think that maybe I was thinking that a little bit, because it was really a brutal awakening when I had, it was just wind all the time. And there was a great quote that I had heard from somebody, and I don't remember it verbatim, but essentially saying, you know, the wind blows from all directions on the river, and it's always in your face.
Yeah.
And really, that was true. I had some really nasty headwinds that I dealt with a lot. And being solo in a boat that was pretty weighted down with the dog in front, it was tough. And so that, you know, it's one day after the other. You just get up and keep going the next day. But there were some times that I actually took some weather-bound days just to kind of preserve my shoulders and back, and I didn't want to hurt myself, you know, that early in the trip.
Either. Sure.
So it was kind of transitioning into the bigger days. But
and Natalie, you were dealing with the similar weather in your hike. Can you? I mean, I assume you remember meeting me twice on the beginning of
that
your trip.
Was pretty darn cool, running to you, you know, running into you and meeting you once, and then meeting you again. Was it 2 or 3 days later,
right?
And you were with some friends. Oh, we were just talking about you, and I come scrambling up from behind.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. So, but you made it down there pretty fast to Duluth from that point on, did you not?
Yeah, I made pretty good time. My goal was 20 days, and it ended up taking me 21. And
wow.
Yeah, the first week was just so awesome. It was like 60 degree weather and sunny, and the fall colors were at peak. It was just gorgeous. And then after that, it just crept down and down and down. The temperatures are getting cold. And I didn't really realize it until I had a time where I was, I hitched a ride into Two Harbors, and I went to the library, and I went inside and didn't really realize how cold it was outside until I was warm. So, but yeah, no, that cold weather followed me all the way down until last week of paddling.
Yeah, you brought it with you when you went down to
it
meet
did,
Lucas.
It did. It was a good thing we were, you know, coming from Minnesota.
So, so you could handle that. I mean, I'm sure it was tough on the folks down in the lower part of the river. But now, Lucas, you went paddled down to somewhere below St. Louis when you met Natalie again, right?
It was actually just above St. Louis.
Just above St. Louis,
yeah,
okay.
So the logistics part of that, you know, we certainly had to figure out. She drove her car down to meet me maybe 4 days above St. Louis, and the boat we had was a Solo Plus, a Winona boat, and so we actually took the center seat out, which was what I was using up until that point, and put in the bow and the stern seat, and then the dog had to move to the middle with the gear, and so I paddled from the stern in that one. I couldn't sit in the bow and face backwards, but I paddled that for 2 days. After she had met me, and while she was driving down to St. Louis, she drove a car to St. Louis, and then flew back to New Orleans, flew back up to St. Louis, and got a ride up to Grafton, Illinois, which is where she met up with me,
mm-hmm.
And all of her gear was waiting there with me. And so she hopped in there, and we left there, and the next day we were in St. Louis.
And What would you say were, once the two of you got together, well, I want to talk a little bit about the lower Mississippi versus the upper Mississippi, but what would you list as the greatest challenges you had, the weather or the portages or the locks, or what would you say?
You know, the portages weren't that bad. We actually were just talking about that. You know, it's funny. It's always kind of, you have to take it with a grain of salt when somebody else tells you about, if you're asking for beta on a certain portage or a certain part of the river, because everybody's experiences are different and backgrounds are different. We didn't really find any of the portages to be too bad. The locks were a breeze for the most part. Occasionally, you'd run in.
Except for the dog.
Yeah.
Well, Tisher didn't like it, huh?
I think we did 28 locks total, and she was great in the beginning, but just progressively got more and more freaked out. So I just had to, you know, really hold her and give her treats. And she got treats from a lock operator one time, actually. Which, she was just uneasy in there. And the very last one we went through was a really, it just sounded like a horror movie, the sounds of it. So that didn't help anything either. But really, the locks weren't bad, unless you met up at the same time with a big barge and you had to wait for an hour and a half. I would say the biggest challenge was weather.
That was the most consistent challenge.
You would agree with that too, Natalie. Even though you joined him later in the trip, you still had tough weather.
Yeah, because you anticipate that it's going to get warmer as you paddle, you know, farther south, but it didn't really do that. And so physically, you might be able to handle it, but mentally, that was where the challenge came in. Is because you say to yourself, okay, I'm in the state of Mississippi or in Louisiana, and it's still, you know, highs in the lower 40s for, you know, the daytime high.
Yeah.
And Dick, you had mentioned earlier, you know, being from Minnesota, that we could handle that. True, but we also hadn't planned for that. And so we were, temperatures that we went through were 30 degrees colder than normal for a lot of those southern states. And I hadn't packed for that. And so temperatures in the 30s, winds 20 to 30, you know, the river water down there, Mississippi, even though you're in the southern states, is still 40 degrees.
So there wasn't a lot of swimming?
No.
Just
no.
Once.
Yeah.
It took a lot of coaxing.
tell our listeners and remind our listeners that we're on the Roadhouse and WTIP, and we're speaking with Lucas Will and Natalie Jackson about, now we're part of the trip where the two of them are together going down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. And Lucas, I must ask you first. You did both the upper and the lower Mississippi. What did you learn about the river from that experience?
You know, what I really enjoyed was seeing in the upper, I loved the small historic river towns. And on the upper, they're all right near the river. The flooding isn't typically as extreme, as frequently, I guess I'll say, up there. But then once you get down below, where the Illinois River comes in and the Missouri and the Ohio, you've got all these other watersheds. You know, I forget, I want to say it's like 44% of the United States and Mississippi drained via all those other watersheds. But once you get below there, there's very little town. It's really, you feel like you're in wilderness, and you are. We always put it that it was kind of a lowercase wilderness, a lowercase W for wilderness, because you know, every part of that river has been touched by man.
Mm-hmm.
The revetment, the concrete walls that are just draped on the banks the whole way down to help with the erosion. And yet there's nothing on the shoreline anywhere. As you hop between towns, sometimes it's 4 or 5 days. And if there's a town, you don't see it usually because it's on the other side of the levee wall, which is sometimes a half mile away from the river. And so the flooding down there happens much more extreme and much more frequently. And so it has a different feel than the upper, only in just the width and in what you see around you, but just in actually being on the water. The current, you know, once you get below Chain of Rocks in St. Louis, you can do 5 to 6 miles an hour just float if you're in the right part of the river, and it's forceful. I mean, you really,
yeah.
Going by the navigation buoys that are out there.
You gotta watch those.
Yeah, those things come up.
Yeah, what Natalie, what was your impression of that huge river? You jumped right into the big part of the river.
Yeah, I did. I did the last lock, and it was from what Lucas was telling me, it was one of the larger ones. And I had been through a lock before, but in a 40-foot sailboat, so it was a little bit different of a scenario when you're in a tiny canoe. But, jumping in right away, the river was pretty wide, and I was expecting that. And that was my guess anywhere, you know, that I anticipated jumping in was St. Louis and down.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was pretty wide at that point. The current was fairly strong, and I think what I had learned about the river was it was pretty awesome to learn that it wasn't as dirty as I anticipated as far as garbage that we saw. And I mean, there's still some in there, but growing up and what I had learned about the Mississippi, and actually my mom had shown me a documentary of a nonprofit organization that's based out of St. Louis called Living Lands and Waters, and they are cleaning up the river.
Mm-hmm.
And not only from their work, but from others around, it wasn't as dirty, and it was just so nice.
Oh, great.
Just a pleasant surprise.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, it's just a pleasant surprise, and I mean, I'm only 26, but talking to people that are a little bit older than me, of them talking about when they were a child and spending time by the river, they have seen that change in the last 10 to 20 years of how seeing how it's been getting more and more cleaned up. So,
well, then as you got down further, when you got down to Louisiana, you'd actually made a route choice there. I don't know if you had this in mind to do it this way all the time, but you went the Atchafalaya Basin or something like that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's funny. I had never heard of the Atchafalaya.
Took us a while to pronounce it, too. We were constantly saying, God bless you, after we'd say it.
Yeah, I had never heard of it, and I don't know if Natalie had either, but
I haven't.
It was totally new to us, and I had actually heard about it further up on the river. There was a guy I met up with in St. Paul who was also doing the river solo and had met it, had started about a week after me, and he had said, you know, that was his intended route, was to go to Atchafalaya when he got down there, and I'm like, oh, what's that? And so he kind of filled me in, and that was the first I heard of it, and as I kept going, and then once Natalie joined, we kept learning more and more about it. And when we were in Clarksville, Mississippi, kind of near Helena, which is right on the river, we spent Thanksgiving there with a river guide, a really just awesome, awesome guy who has an outfitter down there, an outfitting shop. And he basically said you can't go wrong, whether you go, you know, Baton Rouge to New Orleans to the Gulf, which is how I was going to originally go, or if you go to the Atchafalaya. And so at that point, our decision, I think, was made at that point. We still kind of just withheld until we actually got to where we had to make that turn. But for us, it was, okay, we can either go to Baton Rouge to New Orleans, which is also known as Cancer Alley. It is one of the most busiest ports in the world, I think.
Definitely in the U.S., I think it's the number one busiest port.
And it's ocean-going vessels and barges and just insane traffic. And it's not, you know, that can't be done. I mean, people do it in small boats, small craft. But for us, it was, well, we could paddle 100 miles anywhere. Why would we want to go through there when we can go to the Atchafalaya River Basin? Which, basically, the other intriguing part for us was the Atchafalaya River is where the river wants to go naturally. But the Army Corps has a lot of things in place to keep it flowing down to Baton Rouge, down to New Orleans, because if it didn't,
Baton Rouge, high and dry.
Yeah, they wouldn't be there. And so the river wants to go that direction anyways, and it's just not allowed to. And for us, you know, especially for me, starting in the swamps and the really kind of that intimate feel of northern Minnesota, the idea of finishing in a very similar, albeit southern version.
Much wilder than the New Orleans route.
Yeah. And so all of that tempted us too much, so we decided to go that route. You know, good old Cajun country. We were really
Well, and you know, we're going to run out of time before I get through everything I want to ask you, but I definitely want you to tell us something about some of the people you met and maybe some of the most memorable, if it's possible for you to itemize a few.
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. I would first say that the golden thread of this whole trip for us was the people all the way from the top to the bottom. It was just amazing. People were so caring and just the enthusiasm. It was fantastic. Cajun country was definitely a good one. From when we had to actually go through one more lock to get over there into off the Mississippi into what they call Old River, and that was 7 miles, which connected to the Atchafalaya. But the lock operator, when we got there, he wasn't answering the radio at all. It turns out he was out picking turnips. And so we happened to catch him at the base of a boat ramp, and he, you know, realized we wanted to get through there. So he gave us a bunch of turnips and then sent us through. And then from there, the accents got thicker, and there was more French terminology for things. And
we were still having turnips in every meal.
Yeah, all the way to the Gulf. There was a lot, actually, within that last week. It took us 6 days to get there from turning off the Mississippi to actually reaching the Gulf. on that last day. And we stayed at a couple different camps, hunting camps. And the one was after we had gone, we followed that small Atchafalaya the whole way through that swampy river basin. And we'd gone by a boat launch one day and met a the boat launches down there are just crazy. I mean, it's hunting season right now and for deer and duck. And it, 40, 50 vehicles on a weekday in the parking lot. It was crazy. And we met a guy who asked what we were up to, and he invited us to the camp, which was 16 miles downriver. He was about to get in his boat and go down there with his family, and he invited us to stay. And we'd kind of brushed it off, but we started paddling. It was a gorgeous sunny day. Actually, it was warm. And we saw a 3 or 4 foot gator on the shore, which we didn't, I mean, we knew they were there, but we kind of figured they'd be in the mud. And we saw that, and then we saw a 5 foot gator, and then we saw an alligator that was the size of our canoe, although it was dead. Its head was cut off, but it was on the bank, and just the sheer size of it, it became very real.
And we remembered Craig's name and where he lived. And
yeah,
we were at his house that night.
Yeah, so we made a beeline for that camp, and they were fantastic. I mean, that was our first. They had made gumbo. We had gumbo that night and talked. They just shared stories about just what they do down there. It was just incredible. It was so much fun. And there was a few more hunting groups that we met the rest of the way, and that's who gave us a ride back up, actually, once we reached the Gulf. We got to the Gulf. It was low tide, so there was nowhere to get out. It was too muddy and just soupy. So we kind of wedged our boat up and drank a bottle of champagne and had a little lunch and spent about an hour, and then we turned around and we had to paddle back up 25 miles to Morgan City, which had actually a lot more current than we thought. And within a couple hundred yards, we had flagged down a boat. They were picking up deer stands, and they gave us a ride back up. In their big, basically like a big John boat like we have up here, but they're much larger down there. people were fantastic.
So, yeah, that's kind of a strange little end there. You've documented that your champagne celebration very nicely on your, on your Facebook page. Okay, we have to wind up here. I just hate to do it already, but is there anything you'd like to add for listeners now or any life lessons that you think are important to pass along?
The ones that I've heard on my own doing trips, and then the ones that Lucas has heard by himself, and then us together, is do it while you're young. You're so lucky. I wish I could do that. Or the opposite. I'll never do that. You're crazy, but you can. And in Lucas's words, just take it day by day. But my goodness, for the times that we've heard, you're so lucky, or I wish I could do that. For anyone who's listening, you can do that.
You can do it.
I mean, I just could get on a pedestal right now, a soapbox, and just go off on whatever your passion is, whatever your dream is. Just go for it. Go after it. And you'll be happier for it.
That's really sweet. I mean, it mirrors what Noah Horak told me last week when I talked to him about his round-the-world motorcycle trip, You can. It's not that difficult. You guys, you can do this.
Day by day.
I mean, take a day at a time. You made some long. You did some long days of paddling. I know, and you. I did. We never got into how you found campsites and all that sort of thing, but you had a lot of things you had to deal with. Weather, not the least of them.
Yeah.
So, what's
can I,
next
can I say
for
one
the?
Thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I guess what I'd add to that too is, if folks do have questions about stuff, the thing that we were really grateful for, and what I'd say thank you to everybody was for following us. You know, if we look at the people who like the Paddle in Hand page, the Facebook page, and that's all we did was document it on Paddle in Hand on Facebook. But I only know 20% of those people, I think. And so it was really, really cool for us to have people following along and being really enthusiastic.
Yeah, and it wasn't something you actually sought out or tried to get people to.
No.
But it got word of mouth came around or word of internet or whatever
sure
it is.
But it was incredible. And so I say thanks because that was really a lot of fun. The times that I was alone or, for both Natalie and I when we were struggling through weather, it was great to have. It felt like people were there with us and the support. That was a lot of fun. So I'd say thanks.
Yeah, and I was intending to mention that people can learn more about this whole adventure by going on Facebook to Paddle in Hand, three words, Paddle in Hand. Their Facebook page has blow by blow account of the whole trip. So, what's next for the two of you now?
Great question. Well, we landed in Missoula on New Year's Eve, just in time to celebrate, and we'll be here until. early May, and we're heading back. We'll actually be on Lake Superior next summer, but on the South Shore.
I heard you mention Bayfield once in a conversation.
Yep, I'll actually be in Corny, Cornucopia working. Okay. We'll be there for the season.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been great